south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start out with the thought for today. Have you noticed that white people's music was so much better when they allowed ugly people to make it? Think about that for a while. Case in point, Janis Joplin, Mama Cass, Meatloaf, and Alice Cooper, to name a tiny few. Now, regarding getting the hell out of Dodge in that plan B of yours, for those of you still on the fence, those of you waiting for more optimal conditions in your own life to get that plan B going, get the hell out of Dodge, well, I've got some news for you. Optimal conditions will not be arriving anytime soon. Though there are some people who've got the right idea. They've got all the intentions in the world to get that plan B going. So what's stopping them? Well, some people just need permission that comes from a higher authority. You know, like in school when you'd raise your hand to go to the bathroom. Well, you know, some kids, if the teacher didn't call on them, they'd piss their pants. Yet other kids would never let it go that far. They'd just storm right out and go to the bathroom without permission. So today, I'm giving you all permission to head for the exits, if you haven't done so already. Hey, you can deny it all you want, but some people really do need to hear they've got permission. I mean, look, if you're living in the first world all your life, you've been asking the government for permission for practically everything. That's why so many first world people who want to get the hell out of Dodge, they keep putting it off and putting it off because their family and friends poo-poo the idea, saying you're nuts. And of course, Uncle Sam, via U.S. State Department announcements that third world countries are oh so dangerous. That kind of pressure used to work in most every case, but these days, people are wising up. That's why I hear from so many gringos and expats who have landed here in Latin America that they never discussed it with anybody else up in the States, not friends or family. They just made their plans, set the timeline, and got the hell out of Dodge and let their family and friends sort it out in their minds once they realized their friends or loved ones were serious about it and got the hell out, for real. And you know, expat Eddie, who's been in Latin America now a little over 20 years, he likens leaving the States to breaking up with a girlfriend or significant other by just never calling him again. And though it might seem like the coward's way out, some people just don't deal well with face-to-face confrontation. Meanwhile, up in the States, everyone walks on eggshells, lest they be accused of being a racist or spewing microaggressions or being culturally or racially insensitive. Everyone, that is everyone who's addicted to social media, is afraid of being canceled. So they just suck up, play the game, bite their tongues, and remain spineless weenies. However, down here in Latin America, that kind of stuff just does not exist except on the gringo tourist trail, where naturally, cancel culture, etc. is in full force. However, when off the gringo tourist trail, how can I explain this? Oh, I know. You go into a Chinese restaurant, pick up the menu, and the first thing you see at the top is an appetizer called Tacos Chinos. Translation, Chinese tacos. Can that be right? How can they get away with that? Isn't that a double insult to both the Chinese and the Mexicans? In the States, that would mean, of course, that the cook would have to be half Chinese and half Mexican to get away with it, correct? Or else it's the sin of cultural appropriation. Now, I have to admit, that's totally confusing to any gringo or expat who first sees that Latino phrase for what we call up in the States, egg rolls. Yep, and you wonder how there could be such controversy over a simple thing like egg rolls. Now, I don't think anytime soon you're going to see on the menu up in the States in a Chinese restaurant, Tacos Chinos. Now that would be a trigger for hyper-culturally sensitive woke people, now wouldn't it? There'd be a call right away to the cultural misappropriation police, and that restaurant would be canceled on all social media platforms. I know, it sounds like a bad joke, but you know, up by you, they're dead serious about that horse. Meanwhile, down here in Latin America, except, as mentioned, when you're heavy on the gringo tourist trail. Those BLM woke activist snowflake types just do not exist. And if you're wondering if they're going to show up in the near future, well, I'd say it's very unlikely. And if Latinos do become woke, I'd say it'd be what you might call woke extra light. And because of that famous Latino lag time, it probably won't happen for 10 or 20 years. And where's it going to start? Well, of course, in those expensive upscale helicopter universities. with the entitled Children of the Rich, who are extreme gringo wannabes. Oh, and you should know that Latinos who are watching the news coming out of the first world, they're totally confused about this cancel culture woke thing that's happening up by you. And the LGBT BLM stuff. They roll their eyes and are thoroughly confused on that count, too. I've talked to quite a few Latinos myself, and I had to explain to them what that new alternate definition in the first world of what the word woke means. And I'll tell you, once I'm done explaining it to them, they give me that look, well, you know it. You're joking, right? They say in Spanish, of course, you've got to be shitting me. And I'll tell you, it takes way too long to explain the nuances to anyone. So when they ask me about being woke and what that cancel culture thing's all about, I tell them it's complicated, stupid, a waste of energy, and you don't want it to come to a town near you. And I usually end up by saying, I can't tell you how glad I am to be living here in Latin America. So all you guys and gals out there who are on the fence, who need permission for everything, well, I'm giving it to you. Come on down. But if you happen to be woke, go ahead and move to Mexico or Costa Rica, but please stay out of my hood. Meanwhile, on the Latin American COVID-idiot front, you've heard me mention in recent past shows that I've postponed my seminar. That is, till Dr. Fauci and those WHO idiots and that human slug Bill Gates give the word that the world has herd immunity. And you know when that happens, and it will, COVID-idiot testing will be no longer necessary. Because you know every bacterial and viral disease does eventually reach herd immunity. Then no more testing, because at that point, the virus will have made its way through the majority of people on Earth. In other words, most will test positive. Thus, no need for the shish kebab stick up your nose treatment. By the way, speaking of COVID-idiot testing, did you hear the recent news out of the UK just this week? Let me quote this exactly for you, so there's no mistake about it. It's from the British rag, The Guardian. It says, regulators in Britain have given the green light to a 20-second COVID-idiot rapid test. The product's distributor revealed this on late Friday, March 26, 2021. Then it says the 20-second ultra-rapid test known as Virulens has been already piloted at Heathrow Airport and has proved very successful. It utilizes a swab on the cheek instead of a stick up your nose. I'm reading this here. It says, the Virulens company said there'll be a wide rollout of the test in the coming months. And accordingly, it's about 97.1% accurate, meaning it'll have very few false positives as compared to traditional PCR tests. Now, on the same theme, you might remember about a month ago, I was talking about the fact that I was at a resort and they had a little clinic right on the premises that offered free shish kebab stick up your nose PCR tests because people need to have a negative PCR test to fly back to the States and Europe. That's why many hotels are offering it on premises to lure people that may have been afraid before to come to the resort. Now, last week, you heard me mention that I saw a Russian guy test positive and all hell broke loose because now the guy was stuck at the resort for at least 10 days until he tested negative. And the guy was with his wife too and she tested negative. So what then happens to her while the guy remains quarantined in his hotel room for 10 days? Anyway, you've probably been seeing in the news that loads and loads of people have been going to Mexico, Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Tulum, and lots of other resort areas. They become very popular with gringos up in the States who just can't take it anymore. They've got cabin fever and they want to get the hell out for a week or two. And since when you arrive in Mexico, it's one of the few countries that doesn't require a PCR test or any kind of COVID-idiot test on arrival. Well, that sort of gave a pretty good boost to tourism. And though the tourist numbers are not nearly up to as high as they were before COVID yet, at least the majority of resorts have enough occupancy now so that they can stay open and not run at a loss. So anyway, people are wondering what happens if you're, let's say, stuck in Cancun and you test positive and you're supposed to go back to the United States the next day. Well, here's yet another boots-on-the-ground account of exactly that situation. Let me highlight this case for you, and I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts as usual. The article starts, 30-year-old U.S. citizen Corey Mudd grew concerned when a hotel manager and other officials pulled up in front of his resort hotel room and started wiping down the door and handles and stuff, he said. They asked me if it was my room, and I said yes. Then they delivered the bad news. Mr. Mudd's COVID-idiot test taken that morning at the hotel so he could board his flight back home to Michigan turned out to be positive, yet he felt no symptoms at all. Even so, it was bad news because the manager said to him he had to pack up and move to another room for mandatory isolation. An hour later, after whisked to his new room, his wife, who had tested negative, was given the choice of staying in their casita at the resort hotel or moving into a room next door to her husband in the quarantine wing of the Riviera Maya Resort. Did you know that? Hotels and resorts in tourist areas have quarantine wings now. As for his wife, she selected the room in the quarantine wing, next to her new husband. All that happened on the fifth day of their week-long honeymoon in Riviera Maya outside Cancun. Now, the good news is, if there's any good news at all, Mexican resort officials are reporting that only about 0.5% of hotel guests test positive the day before they're supposed to go back home to the U.S. or Europe. That means about 1 out of 200 guests will test positive on that last day before they leave, and thus will have to remain behind for 10 to 14 days until they test negative. Problem is, no one ever goes to a resort alone. They bring a significant other or come with a group or a party. So, for example, if it's a party of four and one person tests positive, there'll be three other people stuck in limbo too. So the odds are pretty good that it won't happen to you. But again, if you're traveling, you do have to ask yourself, do you feel lucky? Anyway, just thought it was important for you to know about that. Oh, and speaking of Mexico, which you longtime listeners know I don't recommend for a permanent Plan B destination, though it's a nice place to visit, especially since they've got all those nice package deal resort vacations. And sure, you can find lots of nice little gringoized pockets in Mexico where you really don't have to learn any Spanish at all. Though, then you're talking about gringo prices. And by the way, you know, even in those famous resort towns like Tulum, Cancun, Cozumel, Playa del Carmen, etc., etc., the gangs, the narcos, and the bad boys have their eyes set on you wealthy gringos, you know. And look out, especially since they're legalizing marijuana in Mexico within the next couple of months. And thus, the narcos will be scrambling to top off their depleted coffers. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, how about this for good news out of Mexico? This week's news, coming out March 30th, the headline is, Mexican officials condemned the weekend killing of another mayoral candidate. But is that such a bad thing? Hey, you know, down here in Latin America, politicians are bumped off and disappeared all the time. And if you doubt that, here's the stats. And here's a quote from the same article. It says, political analysts in Mexico said Monday that 18 candidates have been killed so far in the run-up to the June midterm elections. Did you get that? 18 senatorial and mayoral candidates bumped off just this year. Now, some people might think that's just terrible, but as for me, I'd say it's a good start. Hey, I figure, what's not to like about eliminating a few thieving, parasitic sociopaths? But that's just me. Same thing goes when narcos kill narcos. I mean, come on. Who but their mamas shed any tears, huh? Oh, and in other Latin American political news, you gotta love this. Turns out last week in Ecuador, there was a televised presidential debate. In the run-up to presidential elections, which take place on April 11th, the two principal candidates, Andrés Arauz and Guillermo Lasso, went at it on TV. And here's the part you gotta love. Lasso called Arauz a liar 12 times in the debate. Yep, he pulled no punches. He called him a bold-faced liar 12 separate times. He didn't tiptoe around the subject. He didn't say that Arauz misspoke, had bad information, or was misinformed. He didn't weenie out like American candidates do in debates. Instead, he called him a liar a dozen times on national television. You gotta love it. Of course, he's stained too. All politicians are liars and sociopaths. He's just a kettle calling another kettle black. But at least you know some of them are honest about being dishonest, if that makes sense. All right, now for my crazy-ass boots-on-the-ground story for this week. Turns out a gringo expat friend of mine wanted me to help him locate a hyperbaric chamber. You know, those hyperbaric chambers are used for all kinds of things these days. You know, it infuses oxygen into your system, good for burn and stroke victims, skin lesions, and for guys like Michael Jackson. Basically, it accelerates the healing process. So for whatever reason, lots of people who are into health and fitness, they're on board with doing time in a hyperbaric chamber. Now, until this expat buddy of mine's request, I had never even seen one of them. Though I've been at many Latin American hospitals and clinics where I've seen signs that say, we have a hyperbaric chamber here. So it took me all of around 10 minutes hunting around on the internet to locate a place that had one. Fact is, this particular clinic had four of them. It was a hyperbaric clinic. That's all they did there. It was all about hyperbaric treatments. So he phoned him up, made an appointment. I tagged along. The first reason being he didn't speak any Spanish, and secondly, I wanted to see what kind of setup they had, what kind of machines, etc., and just how they did the treatments. All right, so we walked in the main room. There were four hyperbaric chambers in a row. All of them very high quality, looked like they weighed a few thousand pounds each, made in Germany. You know, if there is such a thing as good, better, and best hyperbaric chambers, you know, made in China versus made in Mexico versus made in Germany, man, this was top shelf all the way. They must have been pretty new, too, since they all had flat-screen TVs in them, so you could search the web or watch Netflix while you were getting your hour treatment. All right, so far so good. But here's what makes this a real interesting, kind of off-the-wall, boots-on-the-ground story. So we sat down in that room, my buddy waiting his turn. There were three other people ahead of us, sitting and waiting in chairs like we were. But these weren't ordinary people with ordinary conditions. They were three 30-something young ladies from the United States. Actually, they were three U.S. citizens of Latina extraction, with perfect English, meaning they were born up in the States, or maybe came to the States when they were very, very young. Because, you know, the only way you can learn a language without a trace of an accent is to be born in that particular country or immigrate before you're something like 13 or 14 years old. After that, forget about it. You're stuck with an accent. So anyway, my buddy's turn came. He got in the chamber, and I sat there for an hour in small talk in English with the ladies. You know, the usual, how do you do's? Where do you come from? How'd you get down here? How'd you find this place? Et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it was really hard to keep a straight face while asking those questions because all three of those ladies were wearing those corset-like liposuction compression garments. You know what I'm talking about, those post-surgical garments that ladies have to wear after they've had some lipo or other nips and tucks. So there I was, sitting for an hour with three ladies I didn't know. They were all bruised and battered, that's what that kind of surgery does to you, with two of those ladies carrying around drainage bags. Whoa. You know, to drain off the excess fluids after surgery. Now, that kind of thing might be familiar to you if you've had some of that kind of surgery yourself or someone in your close family has had it. But here's the strange part. When I asked them how they ended up here in Latin America getting that surgery done, they said medical tourism websites that they'd searched the net up where they live. Two of them lived in New Jersey, one in Miami. And they found they could get the cosmetic surgery done for a third of the price of surgery in the U.S., including the airfare and the extra week they'd have to stay down to get the follow-up checks, and including a couple of one-hour sessions in a hyperbaric chamber. That was a new one on me. Well, you learn something new every day, which again is supposed to aid greatly with healing, reduce swelling and scarring, etc. Here's the thing. These three ladies didn't know each other, but they had the same surgeon because they all found him on the internet by searching for medical tourism. So naturally, I asked them if they'd rate the experience for me. Well, all three of them praised their doctor and the work he did. Apparently, there were lots of people getting work done by this guy, and they saw the results in the waiting room of the doctor's office. They were amazed how good the end results were. However, and this is a big however, that medical tourism package included a week at a kind of a convalescent home, where they had a couple of nurses on staff looking after you, meals provided and all that. And all three of the ladies said that place was pretty horrible. They didn't like the food. They said it was terrible. And get this, they said the water at the place wasn't on 24/7, only about 8 to 10 hours a day. Sound familiar? You long-time listeners have heard me squawk about municipal water in Latin America many times, haven't you? It's almost never on 24/7. That's why most people, with a few bucks, have cisterns. Anyway, worse yet, they said there was no hot water in the place, you know, for showers and stuff. And their garments, they said, you know, those post-operative corsets, those compression garments, well, they said those things would get saturated with blood and fluids, especially in the first 2 or 3 days, and they only did laundry every couple of days. So the situation wasn't pretty. And I asked them, would they do it again? And they all said, yes, they would. Except they'd skip the week at the assigned home. They'd bring down a caretaker or family member and book a hotel or resort nearby for the following week. So in any event, the cosmetic surgery package deal these three Latina/gringa ladies hooked up with in their home states in the U.S., well, they said the surgery part was fine. It was the follow-up that sucked. Then again, they found their surgeon in that package deal by hit and miss on the internet. So then what's my advice? Well, if you're looking to get any kind of elective surgery or dental work done, I've got a nice network of vetted medical professionals here I can hook you up with. Again, I have to tell you, I make nothing from this. I get no kickbacks for recommending any of these people. Oh, and by the way, my fully bilingual seminar logistics lady and girl Friday. Am I going to get canceled for saying that, Girl Friday? I guess not, as long as you could transpose it and say Boy Friday once in a while. That sounds pretty gay, doesn't it? Anyway, my seminar logistics lady's father is a well-known surgeon in Guatemala. Plus, we're connected with a number of first-world hospitals and clinics. So if you're thinking about going the medical tourism route, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll hook you up. Now, on that subject, I have to tell you, I do get some rather negative mail from surgeons and doctors in the United States when I talk about any of this kind of stuff because, you know, it's cutting into their territory, their profit margins, right? They don't want to hear about patients leaving the States and getting their work done in Latin America or anywhere else in the world. In fact, on an upcoming show, I'll be reading some emails from doctors who don't at all like what I have to say about medicine up in the States and the way medicine's practiced down here. That includes the stem cell thing, so stay tuned for that. Speaking of emails, here's one that needs to be commented on. It's from Marty. He says, good morning, Johnny. Could you please send me your water filtration system info? The one for your under-counter system that's got pictures too? The thing is, you already sent it to me a while back, and I was keeping it for when I move. So we moved yesterday, and now I can't find your email with the details anymore. Sorry for asking again. Truly appreciate all you do, my friend. We're in Ontario, Canada. Just moved to a very small house from our previous 2,800 square foot home. We're downsizing to the core this year, planning to move south of the border next year after the kids are gone. So looking forward to it. And yes, I do worry about all the changes coming up with the COVID-iot things, etc. So keeping my fingers crossed that I'll still be able to escape without jumping too many barriers and fences. Cheers for now, Marty. All right, Marty, I'll send you that stuff, but I just wanted to comment that I read an article just yesterday, an analysis of a compilation of data from various municipal water supplies throughout the United States. Now, I know, Marty, you're from Canada, and it probably applies to you, too, but they're saying in this article that 69% of all the municipal water supplies in the United States are contaminated with fecal, yes, fecal, bacteria. Hey, that's good news, huh? Especially if you're on board with the new fecal, that is poop pill capsules, being prescribed by gastrointestinal specialists. It's the newest innovation these days. I'm sure you've heard about it. Disgusting as it sounds. It's for the treatment of various intestinal problems, infections, and microbiome issues. Gee, that would mean that 69% of people who are on municipal water in the States are getting that fecal bacterial treatment, whether they know it or not. Yuck. But seriously, if you don't purify your water at home, well, I don't know what to tell you. And if you're saying you know city water's bad, you drink bottled water, then you haven't done much investigating into bottled water either. That stuff's got its own set of problems. Besides the fact it's sitting in plastic bottles for sometimes months at a time. And if the sun ever hits it, millions of plastic molecules leach right into that water. And don't tell me you haven't figured that out already. You know what I mean. Next time you get in your car and reach for that half-empty bottle of water sitting in the cup holder, tell me when you take that first swig that it doesn't taste like a mouthful of plastic. That's why I've put together my own system for under $100 that completely eliminates any and all of those problems. Again, and I've repeated this often, if you want my setup, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I'll send you the setup and pictures of what it looks like. Oh, and in the photo, you'll see it has three canisters. Each one costs about $15. And they're attached to each other with three quick disconnects. That way you can change or clean the filters when necessary, usually within 6 months to a year. And if you're going to move, it takes about 3 minutes to disconnect the whole system and bring it to your new place. All right, changing gears a bit. You know, if you're thinking about moving to Colombia, here's a quick email from Lincoln in Colombia. He says, Johnny, Colombia has always been on my sights as an expat plan B since my wife's from Colombia. I met her in the States something like 10 years ago, and she convinced me it would be the best move possible to get out of the United States and go to Colombia, especially since our pensions and Social Security coming up will kick out over $3,500 a month. My wife tells me, and I've heard you say this too, Johnny, that a couple could live rather nicely in most places in Latin America for $25,000 or $30,000 a year. That fits well within our Social Security and pension prospective payout. So, Johnny, I've been down to Colombia a couple times in the last few years with the wife, visiting with her relatives and such and scouting out real estate. And I found you're right, Johnny. Prices over the last 3 or 4 years have really shot up, especially in Bogota and Medellin. They're almost up to Michigan prices now, where I come from. I found out another thing. In Colombia, they tax global income just like they do in the States. And I understand it's the same in Brazil, too. They also hit you with a wealth tax based on global assets. And Johnny, if you don't report your assets and income to the tax authorities, that is, you try to hide it and they pick up on it later, you get fined 20% of the value of the unreported assets or income per year, plus numerous penalties. I wonder how many Americans thinking of escaping to Colombia are even aware of that. It's funny, back in the Pablo Escobar days, it was hell. And then, a few years later, it became a paradise. But not anymore, Johnny, not since the government started expanding and growing out of control. Yes, Colombia used to be a paradise, but not anymore. However, if you don't live in or near any of the big cities like Cali, Bogota, and Medellin, you could still live a nice, calm, comfortable rural life, pretty much on the cheap, but you'll be sacrificing the convenience and amenities of the big cities. Just for your information, Johnny, signed, Lincoln. And finally, since we're getting towards the end of the show now, I have to talk a little bit about the volcanoes that are blowing off in Guatemala right now. Yep, there are always volcanoes blowing off somewhere in Central America. It's the volcano belt. In fact, at my Guatemalan house, there were two active volcanoes within an hour's drive of me. I'm talking fire, lava, and smokestack plumes and all that. Now, you listeners have heard me say before that as long as you live at least 10 miles from the nearest active volcano, you won't be affected much at all, but you'll have a hell of a view, especially at night when the top of it's glowing red. However, if you live within, let's say, 10 to 20 miles from a volcano, when the wind is blowing just right, sometimes you'll wake up in the morning and it'll be a dusting of ash on your property. Just a very light dusting, like the tiniest dusting of new fallen snow if you're living up in Detroit or Montreal or Cleveland. Here's the thing. After 10 years of living in that house, it was only twice, where I woke up to find a dusting of ashes on the property. And when that happened, my maintenance guy and cleaning lady had their work cut out for them. They were both outside with brooms and shovels, my maintenance guy on the roof sweeping, my cleaning lady in the driveway with a broom. But really, all you have to do is wait for the next rain, and that removes all the remnants. However, there's one thing you never want to do. That is, get in your car if it's covered with ash. And hit the windshield wipers and washers because, you know, that ash is like sandpaper. So if you hit the wipers, you'll scratch the living hell out of your windshield glass. So don't do that. Just hose your car down with water and don't rub on it, and it'll be fine. Though remember, that's only happened to me twice in 10 years. So I wouldn't worry about it. Not a problem.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.